Welcome to the infamous podcast, Bitch, I'm Not Well. I'm Kelly.
And I'm Brandy.
And we're invested on taking you down to Crazy Town, where we talk about crazy bitches who are truly unwell.
I know y'all missed us.
I missed all of you. My little rays of sunshine.
I missed you too, Kelly, because it's been a long time.
I know. I'm sorry. Okay, so we failed to give you two episodes in a row.
We're sorry.
We are sorry, but we did have a good excuse. We went to Universal Studios, and then we fell sick. So
yeah, then my kid has strep throat. Yeah. And I didn't want to get Kelly sick because she was already sick.
Right. All right. So we're going to start you back on track with Catherine Knight. And my question is, did she eat his liver with fava beans and a nice Chianti?
What? Okay, I've never heard of her, but I kind of want to go throw up right now.
Yeah, you're going to want to.
I'm assuming you're not talking about animal liver. You're talking about people liver?
Talking about people livers, baby.
Oh, God.
Cannibal queen.
I'm glad I didn't stop for lunch on the way over here.
Catherine Mary Knight was born October the 24th, 1955. She is an Australian murderer and the first woman in the country's history to be sentenced to life imprisonment without the possibility of parole.
Man, that is
quite an accomplishment.
That is something I would put that as number one on my resume.
I probably would too.
Hi, yes, I would love to work at this child daycare center. Mm-hmm. I was the first woman to be sentenced to life imprisonment. I may be the first one sentenced to life imprisonment that escaped prison to work at a child care center.
We're so proud.
We are.
So I'm going to start out by telling you about her early life and family. Catherine's mother, Barbara, let's call her Babs.
I like that,
Babs. That'll be fun. So Babs was married to a man named Jack Rogan. They lived in Aberdeen, Australia, and had four boys together. Babs started an affair with her husband Jack's co-worker and friend, Ken Knight.
She's really thoughtful.
That was sweet of her, wasn't it?
That was.
Mm-hmm. This scandalous affair led to Babs and Ken being run out of town.
Do you think they chased him with, like, rotten fruit throwing
pitchforks and fire? Get out!
Get out of town!
Mm-hmm. So they moved to Moree, about 6 hours away from Aberdeen. But Babs didn't take any of her children with her.
Mother of the year right there.
Mother of the year! The two older boys stayed with their father, and the two youngest were sent to Sydney to live with an aunt.
Hmm.
And I'm assuming that the two younger ones were maybe too little to stay by themselves, you know, so.
I was just about to ask you, like, maybe they weren't in school yet, so they needed somebody to watch them while the dad was at work.
Right. That's kind of my thought.
Because my feelings would kind of be hurt if I was one of the younger kids and I was in school and everything. And the dad was like,
how sad and upsetting. Like, you have a good life. And then next thing you know, your mom's running off with a man and she's not taking you. And you're shipped off to sent with your aunt.
Ah!
Toot, toot. See you later, kids.
Like, what's going on?
I'm sure it was a sad event. And I'm sure.
I hope it was.
Her husband was not very happy about any of it. Barbara and Ken wasted no time replacing the four boys that she abandoned. Barbara had four additional children with Ken. This is eight kids, okay?
Damn, she is fertile.
Fertile Myrtle.
That's a lot.
They had twin girls, one of them being Catherine, the feature of our story.
Can't wait to hear about this bitch.
Catherine and her twin sister were born on October 24th, 1955, in Tintafield, Australia.
Now, I know you haven't told me what Catherine did yet, but you know how they have that, is it, oh God, what is it? Nature versus nurture thing for, like, people that become killers. Were they born that way, or were they, as they were raised, did they just
right
get it? Well, with twins, since her twin is not part of this episode, I'm assuming her twin was not a psychopath, but
correct,
her was
correct. Couldn't really find anything on her. So in 1959, Babs' ex-husband Jack passed away. I know. And the two oldest boys living with him went to live with Ken and Barbara.
Oh, I bet that was hard.
I bet it was. And Catherine was four at this time. And I'm not sure if the two other kids were boys or girls and if they were older or younger than the twins. Don't know that either.
I'm sure those kids were probably at least like 10. And you go from being a house of two.
Yeah.
That y'all are both a little bit older to a house of six with a bunch of little kids.
Right.
Whew, that'd be a shock.
Mm-hmm.
That would be like me going move in with a person that has a bunch of little kids. I'd be like, oh God, what would I do?
I know. And not only that, okay, Ken, which was their stepdad and the father of the other four, was a violent alcoholic who would beat and rape Barbara up to 10 times per day.
Why the hell didn't Barbara leave him? Babs, you left a one that we don't think abused
you. Left a good catch.
For,
as far as we know.
Yeah, as far as we know, for an alcoholic rapist.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Oh, Babs.
And the kids are all exposed to all this violence and torture and rape and all of that.
Well, there's kind of a check mark under the nurture thing for
there
psychopaths.
There you go.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so Barbara also, to make matters worse, told her daughters how much she hated men and that they were all liars and cheaters and only wanted one thing in life. And, you know, later when Catherine went to her mom for some motherly advice about one of her partners wanting her to take part in sexual acts and she wasn't comfortable with it, her mother basically told her to shut up and deal with it.
That's great
advice.
Stop
complaining about it.
The hell, Babs. Like, there was nothing else you can say. But look, baby, if you don't want to do it, tell him no. Find somebody else.
I mean, if you give up on life, that's one thing. But to destroy your kids' ideals of, like, a normal environment, that's wrong.
Yeah, I'd be like, you know, I know at this time in your life, you think you're not going to meet anybody else and this person's the one. But there's 99.99% chance that you're wrong. You will meet other people. They're going to be a hell of a lot better, and they're not going to force you to have sex with them.
Right, but Catherine was going to her not wanting to do it, and she was telling her, just shut up and do it.
Yeah, like,
what?
Her
what?
Advice should have been, Catherine, if you don't want to do it, don't do it. End it with this guy. There are better people out there.
Yes.
You can find somebody else.
Catherine claimed that she was frequently sexually assaulted by several members of her family.
WTF.
WTF.
She's a terrible mom. She got an alcoholic father, and she's getting raped.
Yeah, and that continued till she was around 11.
That's another check for nurture.
No nurturing there.
Nope.
Although there are doubts about the details, psychiatrists accept her claims, and the events have largely been confirmed by other members of the family.
I wonder who it was.
I don't know, and I don't know what age it started, but I think it stopped when she was 11. So maybe it was like one of her brothers that moved out of the house whenever she turned 11? Because she was four when they all went, right?
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't want to speculate.
Yes, like what
but
if
definitely her... not her father. It was not her father. Another thing that could have been an issue is that Barbara's great-grandmother was an Indigenous Australian for the Moree area who had married an Irishman. And Barbara was very proud of that fact. And she identified as Aboriginal. But back then, they had to keep it a family secret because there was considerable racism in the area. So Barbara's descent was a source of tension for the kids, you know.
That's really messed up. I think if you're considered Indigenous, you should be, like, above the settlers.
Right?
Because you were here first. Like,
that's right.
Your land. I was nice enough or murdered so you could have land.
Correct.
You can say you're welcome at any time instead of torturing me and taking all my shit.
Yeah. So there's all these secrets and stuff that they're having to hold,
you
know?
Like, so she's been seeing her mom get raped. Her mom tells her, it's fine. Have sex
she's
with them.
She's being raped.
She's being raped.
There's racism
Indigenous,
against her.
Yeah. So now she can't even tell people. She can't be proud about her heritage because,
right,
God forbid.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's a lot for a kid.
Right. Apart from her sister, the only person who Catherine was close to was her uncle, Oscar Knight. He was a champion horseman, which would be equestrian.
Ah, yeah. Not Ecuadorian. It's an equestrian.
Not Ecuadorian. You're an all-around horseman, whatever that may be.
Whatever that may be.
Okay. He committed suicide, and she was absolutely devastated. However, she always saw her Uncle Oscar, like, he would always visit her. And to this day, she maintains that he visits her, even in prison.
So do you think that she added him to the visitors list? Like my Uncle Oscar is an approved visitor.
I don't want to break any rules, so I just want to make sure he's listed.
I want to make sure that he can clearly get through security to come and talk to me in my cell.
That's correct. When she attended Muswell Brook High School, Catherine became a loner and is remembered by classmates as a bully who stood over smaller children. She assaulted at least one boy at school with a knife. By contrast, when not in a rage, though, Catherine was a model student and often earned awards for her good behavior.
That's really good. She only tried to kill persons with a knife once that we know
of. I doubt it.
She had good grades, Kelly. Oh, no. She was a good student, Kelly.
She was a good student.
She just tried to kill people.
She left school at the age of 15 and did not even know how to read or write.
I'm a little confused with how she was a good student, but she brought a knife to school and tried to kill someone.
Yeah, was she ever given a Citizen of the Month award?
Oh my God, what if she was?
After she quit school, she went to work as a cutter in a clothing factory.
Okay, wait.
Knives, scissors, give the girl a blade.
She made it to 15 in school.
Yeah.
And could not read or write.
No.
How did she make it? Was she like 15 in second grade? Or was she 15 in high school?
Well, no, she went to Muswell Brook High School.
Yeah, so she had to be.
She was a freshman, I guess, before she entered her sophomore year. She probably quit. 12 months after she was employed as a cutter in a clothing factory, this just didn't quite satisfy her urge. And her dream job. So she became an organ cutter at the local abattoir, which is a slaughterhouse. That sounds fancy. It is a fancy word for slaughterhouse. Yeah.
Oh, God. Yes. Kelly.
Yes.
Abattoir? Is that what you said?
Abattoir.
Abattoir. I'm going to tell Chris that that's his job. You're an abattoir, baby. You're not a butcher.
He is an abattoir. She did so well at cutting up the organ meats that she was quickly promoted to boning.
She was a boner.
She was a boner. And she was given her own set of butcher's knives.
Oh, my God. Was that really the name?
Yes.
She was a boner?
She was a boner.
Oh, my God.
She cut all the meat off the bone.
I think I'm going to quit my job, and I want to be a boner. Yeah. I'm a boner, and I'll have, like, a really sleazy smile.
Please wear a nude, like, bodysuit.
Nude bodysuit.
So she was given her own set of butcher knives. And at home, the butcher knives were hung over her bed. So, as Catherine said, they would always be handy if I needed them.
So, was she planning on boning in her bed, or...
She was boning everywhere. She didn't care where the boning took place.
I'd be scared that I'd be banging against the wall and it would fall on me when I'm sleeping.
Right into your forehead.
There's no way.
Mm-mm. Not me either, no. All right, now we move on to her marriage to David Kellett. So Catherine Knight first met co-worker David Stanford Kellett in 1973. Kellett was much like her father with alcoholism and prone to fist fighting. Kellett's behavior likely stemmed from two traumatic accidents in his previous railway job in Coffs Harbor. First, when his best friend was killed right in front of him in a shunting accident. And a shunter is a person who couples and uncouples train cars. They have to, like, get between the train cars, and they run the risk of being ran over or crushed.
So he was squished, and his best friend saw him? Oh, God.
Well,
I couldn't imagine.
David's best friend was squished, yes, and he saw him. I don't know what was squished.
Well, crushed?
He was crushed, yeah.
Yeah, so that's real bad.
That is terrible. I cannot imagine. If I saw you getting crushed with anything, I'd be gone. I'd be done.
Yeah. I probably wouldn't sleep for a while. No. I'd be like, that's all I would see in my head over and over again. That would definitely mess me up.
It would mess you up. Then, not only that, later on, he helped to rescue several children from a school bus in Kempsey, Australia, that had been struck by a train, resulting in the death of 6 children. I absolutely would not be able to even function after that.
Oh, my God. That made my heart drop.
Like, yes.
There is no way
No.
I mean, especially if six children died. Like, you know, he saw them. They had to be in really bad shape.
Yeah. So
yeah, he I don't think I could work for them anymore.
No.
I know I needed a therapist.
Well, he lost his job, and it was due to deteriorating behavior and performance. Obviously.
That bothers me.
So you can't go work at a train yard after you've seen the first train incident where your best friend gets crushed, and then another train incident where the bus gets hit and six children are dead right in front of you.
Like, I know back then this wasn't normal, but I would think, at least hope today, if that happened, they would be able to help
therapy.
The employee, give them therapy,
mental health,
put them in group talks, take care of them. Don't just be like, look, we're gonna fire you.
Mental health, he was let
go. You saw a bunch of people get killed, and you're just not doing your job good anymore.
Yeah, they were more like, wah, wah, wah. Okay.
That's my best friend, six children.
Yeah.
That makes me mad. So, I'm glad employment laws have improved over the years, because that's just...
Same.
It's a lot to deal with.
That is a lot. So after he got let go from the railway, he started working at the nearby abattoir in Aberdeen and became close friends with one of Catherine's brothers, Lucky David. So Catherine was used to the violence of fighting, right, with her dad and all that. So she surprised her new beau, David Kellett, by joining the fight in one of his drunken scuffles. She had quite the reputation for physically threatening anyone who upset her.
And okay. What I picture in my head is him getting his ass beat and then Catherine coming in and whipping like three or
like
four guys.
Throwing them off
and slamming them into tables and stuff, and him being like, y'all saw that? I beat them all.
She did.
And it's like, no, Catherine beat them all because you're drunk.
Yes.
Your wife handled it up. You're welcome.
Well, they weren't married yet, okay?
Your girlfriend handled them up. You're welcome.
Yes. Catherine had her man's back through thick and thin, honey, going full fist on city with other men. What more could you ask for in a partner?
Oh, I know.
So, needless to say, Kellett put a ring on it. About a year later. They were married in 1974.
You know Beyonce song, if you like it, then you should have put a ring on it.
Yes.
Catherine probably looked at him and been like, if you don't want your ass whipped, you better put a ring on it.
I got your back, you better put a ring on it. I got your back, you better put a ring on it.
Because next time I'll be on the other side.
Oh my gosh. Okay, so Catherine was 19 years old whenever they got married. So young, but she had lived so much, you know, in her lifetime. But she insisted that they arrive at the service on her motorcycle, with Catherine driving and a very intoxicated Kellett sitting behind her like her little bitch.
No, he was not like wrapped around her.
Yes.
Oh my God, Kelly, can we please, please take pictures like this?
Yes, we'll put them on our website for you, okay?
Worse.
He was clinging to her from the back.
What if he had his arms and legs wrapped around her?
As soon as they arrived, Catherine's mother, Babs, gave Kellett some advice. Okay.
Oh God.
Here we go. All right, she said, you better watch this one or she'll fucking kill you.
No.
Stir her up the wrong way or do the wrong thing and you're fucked. Don't ever think of playing up on her, which is cheating on her. She'll fucking kill you.
This is at the wedding?
This is at the wedding when they drove up, when he got off the motorcycle and she told him all this. And guess what? He hurried her ass down the aisle. Like, I gotta get married ASAP.
He's probably
ASAP.
Like...
On their wedding night, Catherine was off the chain. After consummating their marriage three times, I think that's pretty good. Three times. Right. She was pissed off because it was only three times. So she straddled him. He fell asleep after three times. So he woke up with her on top of him trying to strangle him.
Oh, my God.
So,
three?
All right. So their marriage was particularly violent. Go figure that.
No. Catherine seems like such a level-headed woman.
She does. I mean, on one occasion, I'm going to tell you about this. Kellett was participating in a darts competition, and reached the finals, causing him to be a little later getting home than expected. And Catherine was pregnant. And I don't know if her hormones were kicking in or whatever, but she decided to burn all of his clothing and shoes before he got home. And then when he got home, she struck him in the back of the head with a frying pan, cracking his skull.
Oh, my God. I wish I was their neighbor.
What? Yeah. That's.
Could you imagine?
What's going on tonight? I don't know. Let's just go sit on the porch and watch.
I really thought that you were going to say that she showed up at the dart competition and started throwing darts at him.
Wouldn't that be amazing? So he managed to run for his life before collapsing at a neighbor's house and was treated for a severely fractured skull. That's pretty serious.
That is. I would
like your brain at that point is swelling out of your skull.
I bet she hit him with like a cast iron frying pan.
I bet it was.
I mean,
they didn't have Teflon back then.
She was pissed. Yeah. Where have you been? You should be home 2 hours ago.
The police wanted to charge her, but of course she began begging him, like, please, please, you know, drop the charges, and of course he did.
I don't think it should be up to the victim. If it's something like that, and they're like, oh, no, I'm just going to
issue it. You're right, we've said this before.
Yeah.
Yes, we have said this before.
The cops should be like, you know what? He's not going to want to press charges with you right there, because as soon as he says yes, he's going to go back in the house. You're going to beat him with the frying pan again.
You are going to beat him. In May 1976, shortly after the birth of their first child, Melissa Ann, Kellett left Catherine for another woman and moved to Queensland.
Did he bring the baby?
Pretty ballsy. No, he did not bring the baby.
Oh, no.
Apparently, he was just tired of the abuse, so he left. But the day after he left, she was seen with a new baby in the baby carriage, like on the main street, violently throwing the carriage from side to side with baby Melissa screaming and crying.
Oh, my God.
She was arrested for endangering her child and admitted to St. Elmo's Hospital, a psychiatric hospital in Tamworth, where she was diagnosed with postpartum depression and spent several weeks recovering. I don't know where baby Melissa went.
Okay, I was just about to ask, yeah. Did she go to the daddy? Because, I mean, postpartum depression is bad.
It's bad.
But until you've gotten on the medication, mm-hmm. gotten your hormones back, spoken to somebody, if you were doing that to your baby, you should not get her back immediately mama feels better.
Right. And I think that Melissa was given to David's mom because later on, Catherine and the baby, they all go to live with her. So maybe his mom had him, but still, yeah, he should have definitely come back. After being released, Catherine was reunited with Melissa and placed the two-month-old on a railway line shortly before a train was due, which goes right back to what you were saying. A mother with postpartum depression needs more than just an immediate fix and more than just a couple of weeks of treatment or medication.
Yeah. I mean, depending on how bad it is, it could be years that they need to follow up with them, make sure that they're okay, because that's a lot. That's a lot for a mom, first-time mom or 12th-time mom.
Right.
It doesn't matter. They're not all the same.
No, they're not. An unsheltered man known as Old Ted, who was foraging near the railway line, found and rescued Melissa with only minutes to spare before the train passed. And Catherine was wielding an axe through town, like she found an axe, I guess. So she was around town wielding an axe, like threatening people.
Oh, my gosh.
So she was arrested again and taken again to St. Elmo's Hospital, but was deemed sane and signed herself out the following day. How does that happen? How does that happen? You leave your baby on a railroad track, and then you're wielding an axe threatening to kill people in town? And they're like, no, she's normal.
Number one, I'm trying to kill a newborn. Number two,
everything's good. Light to go.
Come on, people.
A few days later, Catherine slashed the face of a coworker with one of her knives and kidnapped her and demanded that she drive her to Queensland to find David Kellett. I guess she didn't have a car. But the woman escaped after they stopped at a service station. However, by the time police arrived, Catherine had taken a young mechanic hostage, holding a knife to his neck. Now, when police arrived, get this, they attacked her with brooms. Sweeping brooms.
Oh, okay.
To disarm her from her knife.
Do you think they were like full-size brooms, or do you think they were like the 3-foot brooms?
I hope they were 3 foot, because that would just make it better.
Too. Oh my God, didn't they dust her, like dusted her off, or did you actually like swatted her?
Yes. I know they didn't have tasers back then or anything, and I guess they didn't want to shoot her, but I mean, somebody hold a knife to somebody's neck, that's pretty threatening. Maybe not in Australia. Maybe it's a common occurrence and brooms are the answer.
God, I would hope not.
But so Catherine was admitted to the Morissette Psychiatric Hospital this time. Catherine told the nurses she had intended to kill the mechanic at the service station because he had repaired Kellett's car. Now, I don't know if that's a coincidence or if she's just like cuckoo machoo trying to, you know...
That's what I was about to ask.
Like, in her mind...
Did he actually repair the car? I don't
know. She's off the charts.
She's off the charts. Like, you've tried to kill your child twice. You kidnapped somebody.
Yep.
You held somebody else hostage. Like,
right.
This is escalating. You're not getting any better.
Right.
You're not showing improvement. Like, this
escalation.
Is huge.
Things only escalate. And if there's no written record of it, then...
It never happened.
It never happened. So... She also told the nurses that she intended to kill both her husband and his mother when she arrived in Queensland.
Oh, my gosh.
But when the police informed Kellett of the incident, he left his girlfriend and moved back to Aberdeen with his mother to support Catherine. So I guess they then all lived with Kellett's mother, who she threatened to kill. Basically,
that's real thoughtful of him to leave his girlfriend while he's still married to a woman with a newborn baby to go and live with his probably much older mother and bring Crazy and the baby on in.
When Catherine was 25, they had another daughter together, and her name was Natasha Marie.
That's crazy.
Mm-hmm. But in 1984, as obsessed with David Kellett as she was, Catherine left him and moved first to her parents' house in Aberdeen, then to a rented house nearby Muswell Brook. Although she returned to work at the abattoir, she injured her back the following year and went on a disability pension. She was given government housing for herself and her two daughters in Aberdeen. And she decorated this house from ceiling to floors with animal pelts, bones, rusted animal traps, knives, and pitchforks. What the F?
I have two young daughters. I've got bear traps on the wall. They shouldn't touch them. It should be fine. Yes.
They're pelts. They're soft. So now we're moving on to David Saunders. So Catherine met David Saunders in 1986. David worked in a local mine. Apparently, he was into the carcass decor and the knives above the bed. He liked it. So a few months later, he moved in with her and her daughters, and the two were married in 1987. She's got, like, a year tops. Like, we're dating, we're going to get married in a year. He did keep his old apartment in Scone, however, which made Catherine suspicious and wondering what he did when she wasn't around and would often throw him out.
I would wonder, too, why do you have another apartment?
Well, I mean, if you're crazy, whatever, you know. So he would move back to his apartment. She would continuously beg him to return.
So he would move to the apartment after she went nuts on him?
Yes.
Okay, would not question that anymore, then. Okay.
No. Yeah. To send a clear signal to him after an argument, Catherine told him, "This is what will happen to you if you mess around on me." And she went to the backyard and took his 2-month-old dingo pup and slit its throat right in front of him.
No.
Just to prove she was callous enough to do it.
No.
No. Yes, she did. And you would think that this would have been, okay, bitch, like, I'm done with you. I'm going to file for divorce, leave, never return.
Yeah.
But I guess he just thought differently and decided, let's go ahead and have a baby together.
Oh, my God.
So, in June 1988, she gave birth to a daughter, Sarah, which prompted Saunders to put a deposit on a house. Catherine then paid off the deposit with her workers' compensation, which came through in 1989.
So, he put a deposit on the house, and she paid the deposit?
She paid the deposit off.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Oh,
Again, God. She decorated the house lovingly throughout with animal skins, skulls, horns, rusty animal traps, leather jackets, old boots, machetes, rakes, and pitchforks. No space, including the ceilings, was left uncovered.
God. Well, she had her aesthetic. This is what I'm going with. She
definitely had a vibe for murder. Okay.
Oh, God.
After an argument in which she hit Saunders in the face with an iron, and this would be a clothing iron, before stabbing him in the abdomen with a pair of scissors, he moved back to Scone. But when he later returned home to Aberdeen, he found that she had cut up all his clothes.
He returned.
Saunders took a long service leave and went into hiding.
Thank God.
Yes. Catherine tried to find him, but no one admitted to knowing where he was. So several months later, Saunders returned to see his daughter and found that Catherine had gone to the police and unjustly told them that she was afraid of him. And they issued her an apprehended violence order against him. This is why it's so important to report everything that happens to you.
Exactly. I was like, there was no medical records or police reports that the guy could turn around and say.
Nothing.
No, bitch is crazy. Yes, this is why I left
her. She was able to go to the police and say, oh, I'm afraid of him. I'm afraid for my life and all that. So 5 years later in 1991, Catherine became pregnant at 36 years old by 43-year-old former abattoir co-worker John Chillingworth.
Man, she likes those abattoirs.
She likes the meat.
She loves the boners.
She loves the boners. She does. And she gave birth the following year to a boy named Eric.
She is fertile.
She's a fertile murder. Their relationship lasted 3 years, but ended when Chillingworth found out about her affair with John Price.
Oh, my God.
Okay? She's never settled.
She's never happy. One guy's not enough. But he better not cheat on her.
John Charles Thomas Price.
That's a long name.
Yes. Was the father of three children when Catherine began an affair with him. John was a hardworking man and well-liked by everyone who knew him. John's marriage ended in 1988, and his two older children lived with him while his two-year-old daughter remained with his former wife. Price was well aware of Catherine's violent reputation as she moved into his house in 1995. His children liked her, though. He was making a lot of money working at the local mines, and apart from violent arguments at first, their life was pretty good.
Yeah, besides the fact I threatened to kill him. It's great. I mean, this is only twice a week. The other 5 days are great.
Mm-hmm. I don't know how aware he was, but in 1998, Catherine and Price fought over his refusal to marry her. In retaliation, she videotaped items that he allegedly stole from work and sent the tape to his boss. Although the items were out-of-date medical kits that he salvaged from the trash, Price was fired from the job that he had held for 17 years. Like, that is, that's
I don't understand vindictive. That. Like,
so the same day, he kicked her out and she returned to her own home. She told her daughter that she had told him that if he took her back again, it would be to the death. And that if she killed Pricey, she would kill herself.
Oh, God.
So a few months later, Price restarted the relationship, but the fighting became even more frequent due to Catherine insisting on marriage and John refusing. Price was going into work with fresh cuts and bruises almost daily. Most of his friends would no longer have anything to do with him while they remained together.
Which, I don't blame him.
Yeah, I don't blame him either.
And I'm pissed her off and be on her hit list. I'm good.
Yeah. In February 2000, Catherine stabbed John in the chest with the children in their bedrooms, terrified. He was finally finished with her. He kicked her out of his house, and he filed a restraining order against her on February 28th to keep her away from him and his children. Good job, John.
How about time somebody took some legal action against her?
I know. So that afternoon, Price told his coworkers, though, that if he did not come to work the next day, it would be because Catherine had murdered him.
That's scary.
Yes. Despite their pleas that Price should not return home, he stated that he was afraid Catherine would kill his children if he did not. Price arrived home to check on his kids, and she had sent them away, like at a relative's house for a sleepover.
That would make me nervous. You're not supposed to have anything to do with my kids. We're separated.
Yeah, and you sent them away.
And now you're...
Whatever. I guess he checked with the relatives and they were there.
God, I hope so.
So he spent the evening with his neighbors and then he went to bed around 11 p.m. At 6 a.m. the next day, a neighbor became concerned that Price's car was still in the driveway. And when he did not arrive at work, his employer sent a worker to see what was wrong. Both the neighbor and the worker tried knocking on Price's bedroom window to wake him, but they alerted police after noting blood on the front door. The police were aware of the restraining order and the unstable behavior of Catherine and decided to make entry after no response and blood on the door handle.
That's not a huge red flag. This is
where it gets really gruesome.
God, I don't know if I'm ready for this.
No, you're not. They broke down the back door. The house was dim, but the officer could see a sheet or a cloth hanging from the ceiling. The sheet was blocking his entrance, so the officer used his hand to kind of push it aside and make entry. He noticed that it was cold and wet, and when he looked down at his arm, it was covered in blood.
What?
He looked again at the sheet and realized that there were two eye holes. Reality struck him that the blanket was in fact the skin of John Price hanging from a meat hook in the ceiling.
Oh my God.
No.
Who is not thinking about a skinned human hanging up there?
Nope, that's what it was.
Oh my God.
Then the officer saw John's skinned torso on the ground without his head or any genitalia.
Oh.
John had been stabbed 37 times in his lungs, liver, and kidneys and severing an aorta.
Oh.
According to the blood evidence, he awoke and tried to turn the light on before attempting to escape, with Catherine chasing him through the house. He managed to open the front door and get outside, but he was dragged back into the hallway, where he finally died after bleeding out.
Oh, my God.
After stabbing him to death, Catherine skinned him in one entire piece.
What?
Yes.
Okay, real quick.
Yes.
She's a butcher.
Yes.
She knew where she could cut him to make this not slow and painful. And she chose not to. She extended it enough for him to be able to run out of his bedroom. If he's sleeping, where can I cut him to where he's dead? He's just done.
Right.
But instead of doing that, she probably did something to wake him up. And it's like, about to play, bitch.
She definitely wanted to torture him.
Oh, man. That hurts me.
So the officer then walked into the kitchen where there was a large pot of soup on the stove.
I don't know if I want you to go on.
Okay, you want me to stop?
Yeah. No, I'm just joking. Keep going.
So when he looked into the pot, there were potatoes, pumpkin, beets, zucchini, cabbage, and the skinned head of John Price.
You're joking.
I am not.
Oh.
The dining room table was set for four with two plates of steak and a side of potatoes on each plate.
Oh, my God.
Next to the plates were two pieces of paper with the names of John's children as seat placings.
Oh, I hate her.
She planned on feeding John to his kids.
I think I'm going to throw up.
Yep.
This is the most evil thing I've ever heard of.
Yeah. They found a third meal thrown in the back lawn. For unknown reasons, they just speculate that she tried to eat it and she couldn't. Catherine was found on the living room floor, unresponsive after taking a large number of pills. An ambulance was called and she was taken away to the hospital and stabilized. Bob Wells was the detective on the case. After she was stable, he questioned her. She said she went to John's house to surprise him. Oh, I bet.
Oh, yeah, that's a really bad surprise.
Letting herself in with a spare key.
Mm-mm.
He was sleeping when she arrived. She sat watching TV for a few minutes, took a shower. She had a sexy black lingerie.
While he's sleeping?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
And then she woke him up. They had sex, and he fell asleep.
I don't believe that.
Yeah. She remembered nothing after that. The bed in the master bedroom was soaked with blood, indicating that Price was asleep or in his bed when Catherine initially stabbed him. The blood marks leading down the hall and out the door indicated that he had tried to escape, with Catherine chasing behind him, stabbing him in the back repeatedly, and drug him back into the house to finish him off. The butcher's knife was still sitting by John's corpse. She cut pieces of his body for the steaks and cooked them. Then cooked the vegetables along with Price's head in the stew pot. They estimated that the incident had taken place early that morning since the stew pot was still warm.
Oh, my gosh.
Catherine left a barely legible handwritten note on the top of a photograph of Price.
Yeah, because she couldn't read or write, right?
Right. Oh, so they could barely read it. And it really didn't make sense. But of course it was bloodstained and covered with small pieces of flesh.
Oh.
And it read, "Time got you back, Jonathan, for rapping," which is raping, "my daughter," which is daughter. "You too, Beck." Beck was Price's daughter.
Mm.
"For Ross, for little John, his son."
What does that mean?
I guess she's accusing Price's daughter of doing sexuals to little John.
Oh, gosh.
Or for Ross, to Ross. "Now play with little John's dick, John Price."
What?
Yeah, I don't understand it. Nobody understood it. There was never any evidence found to back up the accusations, and they were found to be baseless.
So. He just murdered his father, so let's traumatize the kids, too.
Let's go a little bit further, yeah.
Why not? Yep.
Initially, Catherine pleaded not guilty to murdering John Price. She expressed no remorse and still didn't remember a single event of that night. Her defense team claimed she suffered from amnesia and disassociation.
Oh, I'm sure she did.
Mm-hmm. State psychiatrists agreed, but ruled that Knight was sufficiently sane to know what she was doing.
Yeah, bitch is crazy, but she knew what she was doing.
She knew exactly.
Mm-mm.
Due to the nature of the evidence, 60 jury prospects were given the option of being excused, and several took advantage of this. And I would have, too, because it was such a violent nature that
so
they were afraid they were going to mess people up by.
So were they going to show them or tell them something?
Yes, they were going to see all the pictures, all the photographs, everything. So there were several members.
Oh, yeah, I would have voted.
Or appointees, you know, that were like, I'm mm-mm. out.
I wouldn't want to see that.
Nope.
I don't want to see human steak on the table with potato soup. I'm sorry.
Nope. So then Catherine changed her plea to guilty, so the jury was ultimately dismissed. So thank God for that, you know, because so many people would have been traumatized.
Yeah, and his family would have to be there and hear all the details.
Right.
No.
On November the 8th, 2001, a year and 9 months later, Justice Barry O'Keefe ordered Knight to serve life in prison without the possibility of parole and ordering that her papers be marked definitely never to be released.
I wonder if they have that in America. They should.
I don't know.
I'm going to call Australia and be like, hey, can we borrow your stamp that says definitely never able to be released?
Yes, definitely never to be released.
There's a few of them that should get that on there.
Absolutely, yes. So this was the first time that this had been imposed in a woman in Australian history.
Wow.
And, yeah, so she's got an award hanging in her cell, probably. I don't know.
It's probably, like, number one on the resume.
That's right. In June 2006, Catherine appealed the life sentence, claiming that a penalty of life in prison without possibility of parole was too severe for the killing. Pardon me?
Excuse me, madam. Trying to murder a guy, skin him, and feed him to his children. What's wrong with
that? This is way
that?
Too severe.
Sorry.
That's exactly why they dismissed the appeal.
I don't feel bad for you.
Yeah, so
you
she's still...
You earned this. Congratulations.
Yeah. So get this. Get this.
Oh, God.
Catherine has been reported to have taken on a leadership role in prison with her inmates, looking to her to settle disputes, calling her the Nana.
Please.
So regardless of her good behavior in jail, the guards keep a constant watch over her.
Thank God.
She is not allowed a cellmate.
Oh, yeah.
And she is definitely not allowed in the kitchen.
Thank
you.
God. I'd be scared. Be like, we cooked beef stew today. Oh, hell no, you didn't.
Mm-mm.
I don't know if that is beef or Homo sapien.
Okay, so that was the story of Catherine Knight, the little cannibal Lecter that she was.
Thanks for that. I was really hungry and was going to go get a cheeseburger from Sonic, but now I think I'm
going
to become a vegan.
No, let's go get a cheeseburger from Sonic.
Yeah, no, I'm not going to be a vegan. I'm sorry, vegans. I can't do it. I need my cheeseburgers and chicken strips.
I actually tried that and almost died, so.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you tried a really healthy diet, Anna. Your body didn't appreciate it.
My body did not. My blood sugar dropped. My blood pressure dropped, and I almost died. So.
You did not get to play with us at Disney World or Universal, but you did get to play with your husband there.
Oh, did I ever?
Oh, yes. Yes, girl.
All right, so we will see you guys again.
Yeah, thanks, we missed you all. Thank you.
Coming back at you next week, promises.
Bye.
Bye.
We appreciate you listening to our podcast. If you liked it, please give us a good rating. You can listen on your favorite podcast platform with new releases every Friday. Just search for Bitch, I'm Not Well. Send us suggestions for an episode at b.tchimnotwell@gmail.com because Gmail won't let us use bitch. Or visit our website at www.bitchimnotwell.com for more podcasts and our fabulous merchandise.
We'll see you next week on another podcast about another crazy bitch who is truly unwell.